You could parlay, I guess, the guys that use torpedo bats. I mean,
like Ellie De La Cruz, who had, what, seven ribbies last night, yeah. A couple of home runs.
I mean, he's a beast anyway. Who the hell was it? I was talking to somebody. It might have been somebody at SNY that was like, man, came away from spring training, and he's the one guy. Maybe it was somewhere else. I forget where I was, but
I heard that, actually.
So maybe it was on, or maybe it was it Will Salmon?
No, I thought it may have been somebody that we had on. Because I remember hearing the same exact thing.
Oh, I know who it was. Oh. It was at MLB Network when we were there.
That's what it was.
Was it DeRosa?
Yeah, I think it was Mark DeRosa.
Mark DeRosa was like, man, I came away saying Ellie De La Cruz is going to be the MVP of the league.
There you go.
Yeah, I knew it was somebody last week. We were all over the place last week. So either way, yeah, I really don't think that the torpedo bats are the reason for this stuff. But we're going to find out. I mean, we'll see tonight with the Yankees, specifically in this series, facing decent pitching, good pitching to decent pitching against the Diamondbacks. And we'll see as the season plays out. I don't think you go based off of four games or not. Lindor's been using that torpedo bat. We did get that confirmed yesterday. We didn't know. That has been the case. He's been using the bat, and he hasn't had a hit. So it's not the bat that's doing the damage. Although, if you see a consistent uptick in the numbers overall, then I think that you could equate it to the bat, and then maybe baseball will jump in and try to right the curve, I would guess.
We can look at the home runs. To me, I think the most pertinent data that will edit, you're right, it's way too early, you know, give this a couple of weeks here. I think it's going to be average exit velo. I think you're going to be able to take 15 to 20 people who use the bats regularly and find out what their average velo, which is very easy to do for somebody.
Right.
Average exit velo before they went to the torpedo bat. So like Goldschmidt a year ago and Jazz a year ago and Volpe a year ago. And Ellie De La Cruz a year ago. And then find out what it is now and then compare and contrast that to the average exit velo around baseball for those who use more conventional bats.
Yeah, and I don't know why we call it torpedo. And there's, by the way, it's just like enough. Yesterday was over the top. Everybody was talking about it. You couldn't escape it. We did it for 4 hours. I get it, but enough with the torpedo stuff. I don't know why they name it torpedo. And I was looking at more pictures of it later in the day yesterday. It does look, and it makes a little more sense because we know how much Aaron Boone talks about lanes and things like that. The Yankees love bowling so much, it looks like a bowling pin. So I think Booney and his love for bowling, keeps those relievers in their lanes that they're supposed to be in, and he uses those bats, and they look like bowling pins.
Well, speaking of lanes, I am curious what he does tonight here because we've seen a couple of different situations atop the Yankee lineup where they've obviously gone righties, you go with Wells, you lefties, you go with Goldschmidt. Corbin Burns is a reverse split guy.
Right.
So if he's going to stay in the lane, as you would say, even though he's a righty, I would think that you see Goldschmidt batting first tonight, which is going to seem unconventional for some, but they dive into those
reverse splits. Yeah.
Absolutely. They are.
Well, and it's been
maybe
working.
Married strong, but
it's working. What I was surprised with was that when they did move Wells down, it wasn't to flip him to have him hit fourth. It was sixth, I think.
He dropped down a little bit lower than that. Yep. Wasn't fourth.
That was a little surprising. I want to see Wells in a leadoff spot. Give me some more of those homers. I want to get over that 17 and a half.
Goldie looks good, though, too.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you're talking about the bet.
Well, yeah. But no, Goldie's look good. Hey, Boone's pushed the right buttons as far as the leadoff spot goes for now. And also, and you asked him this opening day, and I should have been more clear about the follow-up, but I did basically say that because he said the reason why Wells was why Bellinger was behind Judge was because Wells was leading off. He wanted to go lefty-righty split.
Yep.
That's what he said to us. Then we asked him flat out about, what does Judge prefer? He said, no, I think actually Judge prefers hitting third. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, all right, well, what happens hypothetically if it's not Wells leading off and it's, let's say, Volpe or somebody else,
Jazz,
a righty bat? That would make me think, and I didn't get into specifically Goldschmidt, but the next day you saw it, it was Goldschmidt 1 and then Bellinger 2 and Judge 3. So that's going to be a thing clearly that the Yankees do all year long.
I was talking to somebody yesterday who has watched, didn't see every single second of every single spring training game or practice, but watched a lot of Bellinger down at Tampa, and then obviously he's watched his first couple of games here and backed it up with data, which I won't bore you with, but speed and some other athletic measurements. A lot of people, including the person I spoke to yesterday, thinks that Bellinger is back to being his MVP self in terms of that, like that, just that natural, I don't know if it's a fluidity or a, you got to remember, the reason why his career fell apart, he had a shoulder issue. And he changed his swing because he just couldn't go the way it was going, so he tried to compensate, and it fell apart, and that's why he basically hit 170 or 180, whatever it was. I'm not saying he's going to win the MVP, But it does look like the Yankees got one of the more recent, better versions of Bellinger. He's looked really good in the outfield, too. Very fast.
I'll give you that. He looked good in the outfield. I'm not sold that he's going to be MVP Bellinger.
No, I'm not saying with the MVP.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. But a guy who's going to bang 30 bombs and be a legit force.
I mean, I thought that before the season, obviously, but it's been three games. I want to see it play out here a little bit with the Yanks. All right, BT and Sal on the fan, 888-808-1019. Ray is in Waterbury, Connecticut. Ray, good morning.
Hi, guys. Great show as usual. You know, and I don't like Pete as a number three hitter, but let's see what happens, especially when Lindor starts hitting. But tonight, now, it's a big start for Senga. We got to see what he's got for this year, you know? I'm not expecting him to go long, but he's got to be pretty close to dominating tonight to show us that, you know, we have somebody there that can't act as an ace anyway. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, Senga, and thank you for the call, Ray. I think start Senga makes is going to be one of intrigue. What is Kodai Senga? Who is he going to be in the big leagues as a pitcher? The same way we talk about Vientos needing to cement last year with a backup season this year, Kodai Senga has had one good season in the big leagues. He didn't come in with lofty expectations. The expectations were not for Senga to be an ace. He was looked at to be a three, you know, a middle of the rotation starter, especially back then behind Scherzer and Verlander. But he turned out to be their best pitcher, and then he was out all of last year. When he did come back in the postseason, he didn't look very good. He also needs extra rest at times. He's also everything's got to be perfect. He's got to be feeling great. There are a lot of things about Kodai Senga that would lead you to think, well, we don't know what he's going to be. At his best, he can be an ace. At his worst or not when he's at his best, you don't know what he could be for this Mets rotation.
Well, I know you're a big Seinfeld guy, so I know you'll appreciate this. I mean, I don't understand why they're treating him like the bubble boy. Yeah. I mean, geez, come on. I'm less concerned with him going out, and Ray just said he wants to see him dominate. I don't need to see him dominate tonight. I'm less concerned with that, although you'd like to see him pitch well. I'm more concerned with why, after no activity a year ago, why are you already protecting him this early in the season and moving mountains to make sure that you slot him in the proper spot? What the hell happened this offseason?
I think Senga is one of those guys, much like DeGrom was, where everything's got to be right.
He's lined up properly for his own.
Yeah. Well. He's got to feel great. He's got to be on the right rest, the perfect routine. I didn't look at the Mets schedule and count the off days and things like that. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a built-in extra day of rest before he takes his next start. I'd have to look that up. But I think they're going to try to put him in a spot where he's going to feel as comfortable as he possibly can, especially when he didn't deserve to start opening day this year anyway. Not that Clay Holmes did, really. It should have been Manaea, but he's not here. But they're not going to... It doesn't matter early on whether you start game one or game five. Yeah, opening day, we love it. It's symbolic, but really, it doesn't mean a thing. So rather have him feel more comfortable and get him as much, I don't know, rest or just in his comfort zone as possible.
In 2025, I understand that the old school baseball fan, I can't stand it. Because think about this. Like, if I were to say to you, after he hurt his, but he was it his calf or his ankle when he came back very quickly and he was trying to make that play?
Calf,
I thought it was his calf, right? All right, so his entire season washed out. First the impingement, then the calf, then a little playoff return, not much there. If I told you, hey, Sal, by the way, you know, to start the 2020, I'm talking about like in November once the Mets were eliminated and season's over. Hey, Sal, 2025, Senga's not going to pitch game one, game two, game three, or game four. Mm. He's going to pitch game five. I'd be like,
why?
Come on.
Yeah, I don't think Senga is a, I don't think he's a gamer. That's why I don't think he'll ever be a true ace. A guy who's going to say, give me the ball. I'll go out there and be the stopper. I'll give you 6-7 innings. I think he's got the stuff.
He does.
He's proven to have
the stuff.
He's proven to have that. Now, for 1 year. So I don't know if there's more in there. I'm intrigued. Very intrigued. He might be one of the more intriguing things about the Mets this year. Rob is in Queens. What's up, Rob?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. So I completely agreed with you guys when you talked about how you'd prefer to have Vientos batting third. The one thing I've noticed with Pete's at-bats this year, I'm not sure if you guys picked up on it, he's a lot more patient than he seemed to have been the last couple of years. Like if you look at his chase rate, and I know it's a small sample size, but through four games, he has the exact same chase rate as Juan Soto does. So I just wonder if he looked at the last couple of years and realized the embarrassment of not getting the kind of deal that he wanted, that he decided, as BT said, to change that approach to what it was a few years ago, where he's thinking more right center, and he's able to identify that low and away up and in pitch that was always giving him problems the last couple of years.
And by the way, Rob, as you talk about Chase, right, and again, it's early to reference that, though I certainly appreciate the reference. The three hits that he has, the one home run and the two other hits before so far in the season through four games, one has been to dead center, obviously, and the other two have been to the right of second base, which tells me early signs he's trying to get back to the hitter that he was early in his career.
Yeah, and I do feel like that. I'm just trying to look at so he's got four walks already, but mm-hmm. I do feel like he's been more patient. Again, I'm not looking up the chase rate and all that stuff, and even if I did, what's a four-game sample? But yes, I have felt like that with Alonso. I still don't trust him to be that three-hitter, but maybe we see the best version of Pete. That's all anybody could ask for. And the Mets are going to need that. If not the best version of Pete, then they have to move Vientos up and potentially try to get another bat. They either need the best version of Nimmo or Pete. They cannot survive the season to the highest of levels, win the division, go out there and beat the Dodgers without Max Pete Alonso or Max Brandon Nimmo. They might need both, but I think they definitely need at least one of those two.
Okay, now you might be able to make the case, depending upon what kind of start Lindor has and some other variables, the catching situation, that you need maybe two of those three variables to pop, meaning the Pete, the Vientos, and the, who's the third? Pete, Vientos, and Nimmo, yeah. So for me, and I want your numbers on this, in order of probability, most likely the best version happens, and then order of probability. Number one, you're like, okay, this will happen. Number two,
obviously Lindor, Soto, and I would even put Vientos.
No, forget about those. Just the three guys we're talking about. So Pete, Vientos, and Nimmo.
But I would put Vientos in, not the Lindor, Soto thing, but right underneath.
So he's number one on those three names.
On those three, yes.
I would agree. Who's number two? To me, that's the interesting one. Is it Nimmo?
Well, coming into the year, I trusted. I don't trust Nimmo's health anymore.
Yeah.
Coming into the year, I thought Nimmo was going to have a huge year, finally be an all-star. But then the spring and being banged up already, I need to see it before I believe it.
No, so, I'm with you.
So I would probably say at this particular point, I at least know Pete is going to play every single day.
Yep.
And what's the floor for Pete Alonso?
I mean, the floor, I know we hit 217,
yeah, but still,
for me, the floor would be 230 with 30
okay,
home
he's
runs
still
or whatever.
Hit, 30, right.
33,
so,
34.
And then what's the floor with Nimmo? The floor for Nimmo is,
he can miss 70 games, God forbid, or 50 games.
So that's
or,
why
you know,
I would say yeah. Alonso.
I would agree.
Though if I had one at bat, I still trust Nimmo to give the better at bat.
More than Vientos?
No, more than Pete.
Okay.
More than Pete.
Yeah, I've agreed with that statement in the past. It's very, boy, that trio can kind of wrap your head up in it like a pretzel. Because here we are saying, and I've said it all winter, I think Pete's going to have a good year. I like the grit of Nimmo. I don't think he's as good a player as some people do. But yet, I would rather have Nimmo up there than Pete in a big spot, because I think you get a more representative of at bat, more pitches, just a better at bat, and then obviously Vientos, who's going into year two, for me he's atop the list of those guys.
And that can easily change if Pete shows that he's back to the old Pete, the 2022 Pete. Joe is calling from Milltown. What's up, Joe?
Hey guys, thanks for taking the call. I really appreciate your baseball acumen. Just on the Mets from last year versus this year, if you take Soto out of it, they lived a pretty charmed life at the end of the year, right? All those comebacks, late-inning heroics. And certainly the beginning of the year wasn't their team either. So I'm just sort of wondering what you think about, like, on balance, like, okay, they weren't the team last year or this year that they were at the beginning of last year or at the end of last year. So winning all those late games and coming back, you try to, like, duplicate that is almost impossible. It's almost cosmic.
Well, I think to look
where
at
are they really in terms of this team? Are they a little of both, or are they?
I think they're good. I think they're good. I think they're vulnerable in certain spots. I do think that they'll fall just below the like that 90 win threshold. I know what you mean. Like, they had a lot of. I don't even like the word fortune, because I do think it misrepresents what the Mets did a year ago. And I'm not trying to downgrade that. I'm not going to say luck or grimace. Like, I think that's unfair to the Mets, but there were circumstances. Like, what if Lindor gets off to a slow start again, which he is showing signs of doing, but doesn't finish second in the MVP. Well, that's okay, because you would imagine that Juan Soto's going to offset some of that, provided there's not this precipitous drop from Vientos, who I don't think there will be. But, okay, and if there is a big drop from Vientos, does Pete surge ahead and go back to the player that he was? And if the answer is no there, like, there's just a lot of questions around the Mets. I don't think anybody, I mean, you can do whatever you want. I don't know how anybody looks at the Mets and said that is a powerhouse team. I think they're good. I think they're interesting. I think they're vulnerable as well. All three.
I think they're better than they were a year ago. Last year, remember, they barely made the postseason. Last year, they started out and played awful baseball for a month and a half until June. I believe unequivocally their bullpen alone is significantly better than it was a year ago, and they have Juan Soto. So whatever they were last year, even if you lose in some areas to where they were a year ago, Juan Soto more than makes up for that. And how many wins will it result in? I think over 90, but I mean, they got to go out there and do it. But I don't think there's any question that this team is better than what they were a year ago.
What if Manaea's not, I know he's going to be back. What if, and we asked somebody about this, maybe Al Leiter, actually, when we were at MLB Network. I don't think the league is going to go to school on his new windup and figure him out. I think that that's kind of the new real Manaea. But what if it's not? Would that change your opinion?
No. I mean, obviously, you'd like to get great Manaea, the one that you saw in the second half of the season, but I still think that they're better. Again, the results for each individual may be different. Lindor might not be as good. Maybe Manaea is not as good. As a team, I think they are way more loaded going in now than they were a year ago. Been a while, Brett. How you been?
I've been good. Good winter. We're back at it. A lot of fireworks the first week.
Oh, because of those damn torpedo bats that your brother.
Well, you guys, you guys cheat out there in New York. You always have. You always have.
2009 is way too long ago. We got to do whatever we got to do. We'll take steroids if that's going to help us get a championship at this point, Brett. It's been a while. How you doing, man? You good?
I'm doing good.
So,
yeah.
What is your thought? I mean, obviously, as a jumping off point into a deeper conversation, I'm sure you spoke to Aaron about this. I mean, you've seen it. Other players outside the Yankees now starting to mess around and experiment. Your overall first reaction to the torpedo bat?
Well, you know, on my show yesterday, I had Chuck Shupp, who is the head of Louisville Slugger for a long time, and he's still in the industry. He's with Chandler Bats. And I wanted to get his perspective from the guys that make the bats, what's really going on. And he said, Booney, this technology, we started this a few years ago, and they're just starting to notice now. My layman take is this, and my ex-player take on how this all went down. I don't think you're going to see guys like Aaron Judge, like Ohtani, like Freeman, like Mookie Betts, stars that have been around a long time. I think Aaron Judge, you're going to say, hey, you want this torpedo bat? And he's going to say, I'm doing just fine hitting 50 plus a year with my bat. But it is an interesting technology to me. And the more I see all these metrics, all these data points that's been bringing in, that's coming into sports, not only baseball, but at all the major sports, I see it going in this direction. I think you're going to see some of the, you know, decent players now, the younger players really utilize this technology. But I think in 15 years from now, you're going to be like a golfer. I think that the young kids are going to start at 15 years old. You go into a lab, you get hooked up with all these, whatever on your body. It downloads your swing into a computer, and they say, hey, we'll see you later. And they send you a dozen bats, what you should use. It's like going to get fit for a driver. You know, they put you on the machine, you leave, they send you a driver fit to your specs a week later. I think that's where we're headed. Interesting. Well, I never thought about it.
Yeah, no, neither have we. We really had no reason to think about that. But there are certain restrictions on the construction of golf balls and things that you could put on the face of golf clubs. So do you imagine, and there's not enough data yet to really create one opinion one way or the other, but do you believe the data is going to be so overwhelming supporting the surge in offensive explosion with these type of bats that baseball is going to have to modify them? What's the course correction at some point, do you think, if any?
I don't think there's going to be any. I think it's no different than a golfer going to the tee, having his perfect specs. And you look down, first of all, it's got to look good to the eye. If I look down at my bat, it's got to be pleasing to my eye. And if I look at my bat and then I look down, you know, an example of Ken Griffey Jr., it might not add up. And it's kind of like, I don't know how you do it with that thing, but so it's got to be really individualized. But I see golfers today, they get a driver, they move those weights around on the head. They find their sweet spot. It's a different golf club than we're going to go to Dick's Sporting Goods and get off the rack. Yep. It's going to be specified for them. If the standard is a 46-inch driver and this particular PGA Pro, they're going to make it 45 and 5/17ths if that's what it makes to be perfect for his swing path. I think that's all they're going to do with baseball is make it individualized. You're going to have your own bat for your swing path. And as long as it stays within the rules of baseball, I'm hearing all these things, and I don't know enough about it. I'm not educated enough, but I hear, you know, the Twitter noise is, oh, they're putting the hard part of the bat here. What the hell's the hard part of the bat? What are you going to find the hard part? No, there's a sweet spot, okay, and it's about this big. And for some guys, maybe they're going to move it a quarter of an inch down. Maybe they're going to move it a quarter of an inch towards the end of the barrel. But you're still going to have that same sweet spot. It's not like you're making the sweet spot big. When I was coming up, we had 20 bats to choose from, just roughly. Mm-hmm. And we went down what looked good to our eye. Some had big barrels, skinny handles. Some had thick handles, skinny barrels. So it's preference. It's what do you like, what works for your swing.
The only thing that I would counter with, Brett, is saying that, okay, you're using the golf example, which we all understand, but this is not an individual sport. I mean, there's another side to this. The pitchers don't say, well, you know what, I like this ball better with different seams. They're throwing the same ball. Isn't this an advantage then that the hitters would have?
Well, I mean, okay. How many baseball bats do you think we have the option at Louisville Slugger right now?
Right, I'm sure a million.
40? Oh, 40 or 50? Well, there's not 40 or 50 baseballs.
But couldn't you just there's get one. Whatever one you want to your point? I mean, couldn't you just get the any bat to your liking, whichever one it may be?
Right, but who do you think made those bats? I'll give you an example. C-271, one of the most popular when I was coming up. Griffey used it. A-Rod used it. It was the classic, the C-271. Where did it come from? George Brett and Rod Carew collaborated, got together back in the day with Louisville, and they developed the C-271. Hmm. So every bat out there comes from somebody, some player in the past that went in, developed their own bat, and then it kind of became a staple, like one of the main ones to choose from. And they're still making them. I remember Mark McGuire had a bat, and it was the M, I think it was the MM something. And I picked it up one day. I said, this feels good. What is this? He goes, oh, I made my own bat. I took a handle from this, and I took a head from this, and I combined it. Guys were doing that all the time. Guys have always been mixing and matching an R-161 head with a C-271 handle. You can do that anytime you want. You can call Louisville Slugger and say, make me this with this, and they're going to kind of roll their eyes and go, okay.
Yeah.
And they'll make it for you. They'll make anything for you. Believe me, when we're scuffling, I've tried some things during my day where it's like, you know, give me the worst head that I've ever could imagine looking at. Maybe that's what I need right now. So we're crazy when it comes to bats, but this is really interesting technology. And unless I have it in my hand and down there and looking at it and the way it jumps off the bat, I really can't give you a hands-on how this is really reacting to a regular bat. I know there's no difference. The sweet spot's just moving around.
Well,
and I don't know.
You could try different bats, or you could just do the old-fashioned way, the old-fashioned slump.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And that's a topic for another day.
That is, yeah. Not for this show, that's for sure. But Brett Boone's with us here, BT and Sal on the fan. All right, so the removal of the mass from the end of the bat, conventionally dispersed evenly, and now put more in a central spot and elongating the barrel, if you will. Dumb question coming, but doesn't that make you a little bit more vulnerable at the end of a bat? And if so, why wouldn't pitchers just work to pitch outside so that you're hitting, theoretically, maybe not every time, but a greater percentage of less of a bat on the outside pitch?
Well, the thing is, like I said, there's a sweet spot, and it's called the sweet spot for a reason. It's a small spot. Anybody that hits the ball off the end of the bat consistently, the ball isn't going to go. It's going to be dead. Mm-hmm. The great hitters find a way to get the good part of the bat on the ball consistently. And that means just because it's a pitch on the outside corner, upper quadrant, the great hitters are going to throw the barrel on that thing and hit it in the seats in right field. So that's never going to change.
Okay.
They're just moving around. I'll give you a quick example. in the early 2000s, I was in spring training. I remember a guy's hanging over. He wants an autograph, but he says, "Hey, Brett, I've got your grandfather's bat here." Well, my eyes perked up. I said, "Grandpa Ray?" Wow. He said, "Yeah, game used." I said, "Can I borrow that bat?" He said, "Sure." I went in. I put it on my scale. I did all my metrics with it. It came out. It was a 35-inch, 36-ounce. Sounds heavy, right?
Yeah.
In today's standards.
That's heavy.
But it's the way it was built. Weight was distributed in the handle. Was a big old thick handle, kind of a conservative barrel. And I'll tell you what, I swung it. It was 36 ounces. It felt like my 34, 32 weight wise because of the way it was distributed. So through time, through the generations, the type of bats that were popular really changed. That's why back in the day, it wasn't because these guys in the 40s or 50s are stronger than Aaron Judge and Ohtani. It was the style of bat they used. That's why they were heavier. And you just had more density, but you had these big, thick handles, and it would run through the label. I kind of like those versus the skinny handle, big barrel.
Did you keep Grandpa Ray's bat? What'd you do with that one?
No, I weighed it and this and that, and I just kind of made a deal with him. I said, I've never put my hands on one of his game use, and I just wanted to do all the research, and I went on there and put it on my scale, and I said, wow, we could use this today.
That's
awesome.
And I
ended up signing a ball for him and giving the bat back.
Did that pine tar on it?
Yeah.
It did? That's cool. That's a good story.
You could tell it was legit game use. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. But I don't think this is just 2025's version of that. All right, another quick one. I know we don't have that much time. In my generation, we grew up on ash bats. Mm-hmm. Everything was ash. We didn't have maple in 1990 when I signed. It was ash. I played my entire career with ash. During the end of my career, maple started to come into the industry. And you had a lot of young players using it. Some of the veterans were trying the maple. I tried the maple. I didn't like how it felt. It was a different weight dispersion. I didn't like how it sounded off the bat. And it was kind of, I was a creature of habit. A lot of the veteran guys refuse, and the great players in the game refuse to go to the maple. Well, now you go into a big league locker room, you can't find an ash bat. It's all maple. So I think this is the beginning. I don't know if that's apples to oranges, apples to apples, but I think this is this generation's version of that is, hey, we're all going to have custom bats, and in 15 years, there's not going to be – it's going to be – that's Joe Jones's bat. He's going to have his own personal bat, and there's not going to be numbers and C271s. That's where I think we're going technology-wise.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Brett Boone, who's Odyssey MLB Insider. Brett, also the host of the Brett Boone Podcast. Insider calls brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers professional-grade supplies and solutions made for every industry and backed by product experts. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. You think the Yankees are better this year than they were a year ago, Brett?
No. Okay. Where'd they shore it up? I think Bellinger adds a big time athlete to the mix, can play anywhere. It's going to be interesting to me how Dominguez matures. I think Goldschmidt adds a dynamic, kind of a Rizzo dynamic. He's 37 years old. He's an MVP 4 years ago. But how much has he got in the tank? I think he's got 20 home runs in the tank and a good guy with a presence.
Yeah.
Jazz Chisholm, I think a year ago when they made that trade, I think they got a better player than they planned. And I think Jazz Chisholm's going to be really good. The thing for me, and the only reason I say no out of hand, is with Heel being on the IL and probably not getting him back by the All-Star break and losing Garrett Cole. Man, that's huge.
Well, Brett, answer it a different way. Do you think there's a chance the Yankees have a better lineup than they did last year?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because if Bellinger and Goldschmidt come out and have really good years, you're better already. Yeah, you lose Juan Soto, but then you add Chisholm to the mix. I think potentially he can be. What is the Martian going to be? Is he everything we talked about? I told Aaron, I said, listen, you get a nickname like the Martian before you've done anything in the big leagues, you better be pretty good. So it's going to be interesting to watch him. I think defensively, they're better. Wells seems to be getting a little bit better. Aaron's really, I wasn't in spring training, but all the reports I'm hearing is Ben Rice looked really good in spring training.
Yes.
And there's a lot of what ifs, you know, that bullpen, how good is it? Mm-hmm. You know, out of the gate, he always starts like that, but Williams, I think it's a good, I love the move in the offseason. When Holmes went to the Mets, you bring in Williams from the Brewers. Weaver goes in that backup role. Loaiza guy, I think could play a huge role in this, but it seems like we say that every year, and every year he gets hurt. So he's, you know, he's on the mend coming back. There's just a lot of what ifs for me. So far, so good with this crew, though. You know, they got 15 home runs and they played three games. Hmm. But the funny thing I see is Stroman 6 weeks ago doing a I'm a starter. At the time, he was the sixth or the seventh starter. Now he's number three.
He wasn't wrong. Yeah, you're right.
You got to find a way to just weather this storm until you get a little bit healthy, till you get a heel back, till you get a Schmidt back. You know, and I haven't even got to Schmidt yet. He's been down. Mm-hmm. So if you can just weather the storm, play well, get your boys back and healthy. Giancarlo Stanton, who a year ago, I always talked about, Judge and Soto made that offense go. But the mere presence of a Giancarlo Stanton in the middle of that lineup makes that team. He's absent. Who knows where he's coming back? That's like a big mystery for me. I hear Giancarlo's got tennis elbow, and now it's like, where is he? Hmm. So I don't know. And I haven't talked to Aaron about it. I do that on purpose, not talk to him about it, but hopefully he's going to be back. If Stanton comes back, if Heel comes back, if Schmidt comes back, Luis, again, these guys are all healthy. This is a hell of a team.
Can you put into context here, Brett, the assuming there's some health here and you put a few more big seasons up on the board, just where Aaron Judge resides on the all-time talent and production landscape, some of the great names that you've seen and played with it against?
I remember a few days ago, I sent Aaron a text. I said, how good is Judge really? And he just goes, pretty damn good. You know, it was a sarcastic text, but it's like, I watch him day in and day out. There's a lot of talk about Ohtani and the other great players, and Soto's a great player. There's nobody on the planet. Aaron Judge offensively is the greatest player on the planet right now. And I think the other guys are a distant second. Healthy, getting off to a hot start. Aaron Judge is the only guy I know walking around that has the ability in today's game, with average not being one of the metrics everybody's judged on. But I can see Aaron Judge, if everything went perfect, the perfect storm, hitting 330 with 70 home runs. Jeez. I don't see anybody else with that capability. The only thing that's going to hinder him from that is they're not going to pitch to him at a certain point.
Yeah.
Almost the Bonds treatment.
Yeah.
I mean, we should be there already. If you pitch to him, you need your head examined. Now, Brett, I don't know.
He's unbelievable.
He's the best that I've ever seen. You make a mistake, not even a mistake. You throw him a pitch that he's supposed to hit, he smashes it. He does damage with it. So no doubt about it, and one of the best ever, and certainly the best that I've ever seen in my life. Now, I don't know if you know this, Brett. This is the first time we've had you on this season. We had your brother Aaron in studio with us, and we play this baseball card game on the station. BT and I do it on our show here. And Aaron wanted to come in and challenge us in our own game. You've referenced before how competitive he is. We both took him out. Two games of BT beat him. I beat him. How much do you think that bothered your brother Aaron losing to both of us?
On the surface, he's going to pretend that he's kind of above the fray. And, I'm not going to let that bother me. Hey, those guys beat me. Hey, but deep down, he's going, damn it, I want to win that. And he, believe me, going forward in the future, he's going to bug you to come back. Because he really wants to win. He really does.
Yeah. Not
he
his
really
best
does.
Yeah. Honestly, no. Not his best.
Did he play? Was he cool? Was he cool, though? Did he play it off? Like, no big deal. Yeah, no big deal. But that drive home, it was eating at him.
He was a gentleman, but you could tell wearing that L was heavy.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew I was going to get that. That's great, Brett. Hey, Brett, we appreciate your time. As always, look forward to having you on throughout the course of the season. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
That was
awesome.
Odyssey MLB Insider Brett Boone. Insider Calls presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
We got to pin him soon, too. We got to take him out from the top rope. Get the other Boone. Beat him. Beat Brett.
BT and Sal take on the Boone brothers.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. If they're up for it. I don't know. Might be a little afraid.
I love the big brother, little brother dynamic. Yep. In this case, literally. We use it figuratively with the Mets and Yankees. But Brett has talked about how competitive Aaron is, and we know it. You can see how fiery and competitive he is, not only in the games, but also
the umps.
You know, yeah, all no that doubt. Stuff. And you know, trying to play it off a little bit. But
it's a long ride back to Connecticut, too, for the skip.
B's got bigger fish to fry, though, with the Diamondbacks in town tonight. We'll get back to the calls when we return. 888-808-1019.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Afterward, I went on SNY, you know, did the Sports Night hit and said basically the same thing that I'm saying with you now. I thought Pete needed that, a big moment early on, set the tone, all these different things.
Okay.
I wake up to see this, that WFAN Twitter account posted out. C-Mac, quote, "To have this feeling like Pete Alonso better come through, it just makes me laugh." He calls it laughable for people that thought that Alonso had to come through in that spot. Now, I'm not saying that C-Mac is going directly off of my tweets or what I said on SNY, but I am getting the sense that maybe that had a factor in it. Dave is calling from the Jersey Shore. What's up, Dave?
Hey, you know, guys, love this show.
We got to get a better connection there, Dave. I don't know what was going on. Hoff, what was that about? Was that a bad, or just a bad connection?
It sounded like someone put like a filter on their phone. No, his phone's terrible, but I just kind of chuckle out of that.
Okay, yeah, I didn't
sounded
know. Sounded
like Knight Rider.
Jake is in Larchmont. What's up, Jake?
Hey, guys, big fan. That was actually a shot across the bow at you, Sal.
Yeah.
It was 100%. He used the same words you did.
Yeah, I think so too, Jake. I think C-Mac did everything but use my name directly, and he was trying to beat around the bush instead of just coming head on and calling me out, whether it be on social media or on his radio show, using me by name. Well, there you have it. Calls of the day. I was questioning C-Mac and maybe him directly taking a shot at me. Either way, BT, the story so far of the show has been Pete Alonso and his big moment last night, setting the tone, which I thought was important early on for Pete coming off of last year, all the down years, 2 years in a row with the contract, all that stuff we dealt with in the offseason. I thought an important moment for Alonso last night. And we, of course, spun it forward. You got the torpedo bats being such an integral part of things. It's going to be intriguing to see the Yankees tonight against a better team. You know, the torpedo bats started to lose steam a little bit when Milwaukee gave up 11 runs to the Royals in their home opener.
How about that? They are gross.
Well, that's kind of the point. So is it more the Yankees have a good offensive team? Check. Yankees have a good offensive ballpark? Check. Yankees are facing a horrible pitching team? Check.
Weather was good Saturday?
Yeah.
Check.
I mean, okay, the torpedo bats, maybe. We'll find out. But it's too early to be putting all the emphasis on that silly bat.
Which is why we haven't done it. I think we've struck a good balance. I'm very intrigued. Listen, I'm just looking forward to watching baseball tonight.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the Mets didn't play Sunday. Friday night, the Mets were on Apple, which is a complete pain in the ass. So tonight you get the Daily Juggle. And by the way, you know, today is 40. Wow. I just saw Jay Horowitz.
Yeah.
Post 40. Something. 40 years ago today, as I read Jay's tweet, I was proud to be a part of perhaps the greatest hoax in sports history.
Oh, the Sid Finch thing?
We worked with Sports Illustrated to promulgate, I don't even know that word, the iconic George Plimpton April Fool's cover story that we had signed Sid Finch, who threw 168 miles an hour. Now, if you're a young Mets fan, you obviously don't recall this, but Sal, look at the picture of him throwing without shoes.
Yeah, I mean,
It looks like the Antarctic or something that is just some really remote outpost
here. Did people buy that?
I remember. Now, I didn't buy it necessarily. So this is 40 years ago, so I was 9.
Right.
I remember being in my neighbor's backyard. True story. As when we all got SI delivered to the door, and you couldn't wait for it to come, and you couldn't wait to rip into the articles. I remember shooting baskets at my neighbor's house. And one of the guys said, "Hey, did you hear about this guy who throws 170 for the Mets?" And I was like, "Nah, there's no way." And I was young. I didn't buy into the hoax, but I didn't completely dismiss it. Why would you? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was one of the more amazing things that such a respected outlet like SI at that point worked in collaboration with, you know, the Mets and the PR team to come up and try to do this hoax. I mean, that's pretty interesting, I think.
Now, wait, how are you 9? I'm confused.
This is 40 years ago.
Right.
And I was getting ready to turn 10.
Oh, you're 50?
10.
Oh, no, but I'm saying you're 50 or you're going to be 51?
So
I thought you were the same
50,
age as Boone.
I am.
Oh, okay.
All right, so I'm off by a year.
Oh, yeah.
So I was doing
legit.
It quick. I'm 9 or 10. My birthday's in June. So this
so
is
coming
this
up.
April.
Okay.
So when this
article
comes out,
I'm this April or 52?
52.
This year?
No, 52
oh, okay,
this June.
Yeah. That's where I was like, wait.
No, 52 this June, not
oh, okay.
April.
I'm sorry.
But,
June, no,
sorry. But the point is just imagine that kind of a story
hitting
now.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody's in cahoots with it.
But yeah, now you wouldn't believe it.
True.
Don't you think on social media, you'd be like, come on, I'm not buying that. There's so much garbage out there now that it would get lost.
Sal, 6'4. reportedly timed, I'm reading this, 168 miles per hour. He was from Tibet, played the French horn and pitched with one hiker's boot. I mean, this is the thing. And they even remember that, well, yeah, his name came up in the baseball card. Remember Ron Reynolds, the catcher?
Yes.
For the Mets?
Yes.
So one of the highlights for me
was...
I got
that one wrong.
Yeah. Yes. Was when we burnt a hole in the glove of one of our catchers, Ron Reynolds, to prove how fast Sid threw. So even some of the Mets were in on this. Absolutely insane.
So wow. Next year is going to be 40 years since 86.
No, this is, yeah, 46, 8, right. Yeah. But the story came out
85, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Right. I mean, 2025, correct. Years ago. Yeah, okay, yep, just doing the math there. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe. I remember, I don't remember that. I was too young, but I remember growing up hearing about that. And every April Fool's Day, much like every, July 1st, Bobby Bonilla Day, yeah, we get it, it's old. And then the April Fool's jokes and the Sid Finch. But Jay was an integral part of that whole thing. And he said something as well, I thought today, I thought that's what you were going to mention, like 46 years ago or something, he started with the Mets.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah,
he had an
earlier tweet that it was like one of his anniversaries being with the Mets for 40-something years, which is crazy to think that Jay Harvard's been there that long.
We love him. He jumped into St. John's. I saw him at a lot of games this year. I told you that. But I think
he's a legit fan, unlike Spike Lee.
Yeah, that's true.
Who took St. John's down. As soon as Spike hopped on board.
Showed up.
You know, I was there. Coach Pitino and you got me involved during the regular season.
Yeah.
They still won the regular season championship. They won the Big East tournament. As soon as Spike hops in, they go out in two games.
Aaron Boone showed up. He got a win. Hoff showed up. Got a win.
Boone said he loved it.
He did. You showed up. Got a win. Spike showed up. Got a loss.
That's what happens. Front runners jump on the bandwagon, bring that thing down.
Don't start this again.
By the way, St. John's did get a big-time player. Did we talk
Bryce
about
Hopkins
that
from Providence. Yeah. Well, one of them, they got the shooter from Arizona State, who is ridiculous.